Blog Talk Radio.
Everybody, welcome to another edition of the R Big Show. This is R Youth Fan Jerry, and I am excited about entering in our fourth show of the season and entering the third, our fourth game, and a Big Ten opener when Rutgers welcomes Iowa Hawkeyes into Rutgers Stadium on Saturday. The Scarlet Knights gave us another second week in a row where they fell behind, or well, third week actually, where they fell behind, and second week where they fell behind and were able to come back. Obviously, last week it was Howard, so this is a little bit of a different opponent, New Mexico. You know, obviously not the kind of caliber of team that Rutgers will be facing over the next couple of weeks. Iowa, Ohio State, Michigan, all in a row. But it was a bowl team, and it was a team that, when you're down 21-0, I think there was a cause for a lot of concern. A lot of credit to Rutgers, who bounced back and tied the game at 21. And then we had a little bit of this.
Career five kickoff returns for touchdowns. Janarian Grant should have a chance at this return. Has it from the 31. Here we go. Changes direction. Grant. What a hole midfield. Janarian Grant, can he do it again? Look out. He will. Janarian Grant, touchdown.
Janarian Grant with his fifth and sixth return of his career, and he's just been amazing. Threw a touchdown. So far he's run back. He's run a punt back. He's run a kick back. Run one in, and just been Mr. Everything for Rutgers. And kind of leaves you a little bit to imagine if the Scarlet Knights had found other ways to use him in the past. But that's long gone. You know, they were a pro set team that were trying to fit players into a scheme instead of working their scheme around the kind of players that they had. But it was a win. Rutgers held on 37-28, and they move ahead now. And I have to say, I look forward to this game, this Iowa game, for a lot of reasons. Iowa, you know, I remember as a kid, I grew up in Brooklyn, going way back. You know, Iowa was one of those Big Ten teams that I always looked at and watched. And, I remember when I was young, Ronnie Harmon, who was from Queens, New York, one of their better players, obviously running back, went on to play for the Chargers. And, you know, even when Rutgers started to back in 2005, 6, 7, later on, I used to watch these games with and I remember a particular weekend when I was watching Iowa, I think it was against Penn State, and, you know, not to make light of it, but, two teams, as Big Ten as you get, you know, they used to just grind it out, pound each other, you know, 1-2-3, and, you know, run, throw a pass, punt, run, throw a pass, punt, and, you know, type of 14-6 game. And I said, you know, we can do this. And that's kind of the offense that Rutgers ran to over the last, decade before moving on to this power spread that unfortunately will take some time to get off its, training wheels because the players are not there as of yet. I'm excited about the show, though, today. I have two guests coming on, John Miller of HawkeyeNation.com, and, of course, Bobby Darin, who's been on the show quite a few times representing ScarletNation.com, and we will chat about the upcoming matchup. Now, you know, I always consider myself an ambassador for Rutgers, and you know, I'm thinking with this podcast, if it gets out there to some the Hawkeye fans and who will be coming across Rutgers for the first time, and kind of want to give my little preamble a little bit about Rutgers. And of course, you know, one of the things that Scarlet Knight fans have to take, you know, and not show a little bit of thick skin is, you know, Rutgers will always have those articles that you'll see in, you know, where why Rutgers has done to the Big Ten, you know, why, and you got to take that with a grain of salt, because the fact that it is the media presence that Rutgers was pitching and is pitching, its location and obviously the media around it. So it's always a lightning rod. And let's face it, between Julie Herman and the Mike Rice incident, and then last year the arrest and everything, they did a lot of things to make themselves a butt of a few jokes. But, you know, kind of want to circle back, though, you know, again, for the Hawkeye fans who are listening and will listen to this. And, you know, this today, actually, Rutgers announced that they'll be honoring the 2006 team, of course, that holds a special place in you know, our hearts and minds, and of course the 1976 team from 40 years ago. But it is crazy that already the magical year 2006 is 10 years ago. You know, look back at when Greg Schiano was here with 2006, and as the team progressed, 2007-8, the consecutive bowl games. You know, it was 9 of 10 years, I believe, were bowl games. You know, you flip on the TV right now, you look at the New England Patriots, there's three defensive backs out there that are Rutgers players. And think about that team where they were in 2012. I always say the potential, people don't realize how close Rutgers was there almost to taking to the next step. And in 2009, Schiano brought in his prior's quarterback and Tom Savage. Things went sour in terms of that relationship. So Savage had a great 2009 freshman season. Of course, the story we know, some struggles the sophomore year, and then eventually transferred out of the school. But the plan would have been Savage playing with that 2012 defense that we're talking about. Last week, Marcus Cooper was NFL Defensive Player of the Week for the Arizona Cardinals. He was a backup on that team. He was the fifth defensive back. Again, look at Logan Ryan, Brandon Bean, guys all in the NFL, Logan Ryan with Daron Harmon now in the Patriots. There was a lot of talent on this team. So I think there's a misconception that some of the struggles that are taking place right now is because Rutgers is in the Big Ten. It's not because Rutgers is in the Big Ten. It's because the recruiting fell off so heavily after 2012. And remember where Rutgers was sitting after that season, and the 2013 class that they potentially had was a top 25 class. And then, you know, it started to fall apart with the blowout losses to Houston, the class decommit after decommit, and they ended up losing all those players. And then you know how the story goes. Basically, Rutgers started to take some flyers on players that they probably shouldn't have. We look back and say, well, you know, some of those late additions, some of those guys that they pulled out of Florida that were three-star players just because they lost so many players. And, you know, unfortunately, many of those players were ones involved in incidents that were, you know, now no longer with the team. And what you're dealing with is a bunch of young guys in the secondary, guys who, you know, weren't the caliber of, again, I go back to these NFL-type players. And it wasn't just Daron Harmon and these recent guys, you know, Joe Freds, McCourty, obviously, several guys, Courtney Green over the last, 10 years. So the talent is not there right now. So, you know, Rutgers unfortunately has to get back almost. And it's kind of crazy for those that, you know, we don't have a great of history in terms of success, but they have to get back to where they were in terms of that talent level, where Shannon was able to keep players from not going to Iowa or Penn State or Pittsburgh, for example, or Wisconsin. And you're never going to keep the studs from going to Ohio State and to Michigan, because there's such an allure at those programs. But what you have here is the potential to get back to keeping this New Jersey talent. Last year, they got zero out of 15, top 15 players in his own state. Now, that can't happen. If they get back to that, then, you know, they're not going to beat Ohio State anytime soon. But then they can compete. Then they can be exactly what they did in their first year in the Big Ten. They didn't do anything special. They just won 8-4 by beating the games that they should win. beating Indiana, by beating Maryland. And if you're going 8-4, then things get easier to pitch, and then maybe you keep one of those top players. You keep two of those top players, and then it goes. But that's my little speech that I have to give out there. And, you know, again, I know Rutgers will take a lot of the brunt of a lot of jokes. And it's not just a talent thing. It is a talent thing, but it's also a perception that they have to fight. And unfortunately, it's going to be a little bit of a slow rebuilding process to getting back to at least a level of success that they had prior to this step back. But without further ado, I do want to start talking about Rutgers and Iowa. So I want to welcome John Miller again from the HawkeyeNation.com. John, thanks for coming on the show.
Hey, thanks for having me on. I appreciate it. You're talking about Ronnie Harmon there. I'm like, hey, this guy knows my love language. I was 15 or so back in the mid-80s, and Ronnie Harmon and his brother Kevin came out to Iowa. And, you know, my mom worked the concession stand at Kinnick Stadium, so I'd get there real early in the morning. And one year it was Iowa against Northern Illinois, and it was rainy, and I'm down there by the end zone, and I start to strike up a conversation with the man, and here I am all like 14 or 15, and come to find out that he was Ronnie and Kevin's dad. And after the game, he asked me to stop by the locker room, and I got to meet him. So the Harmons always have a special place in my heart for sure.
Oh, yes, I do remember. And it's funny because the game has changed so much now when you're watching, especially the NFL, how they have these running backs that catch so many passes. Like,
right.
You know, he was a very versatile player that in his day would have probably even had even a better NFL career.
Yeah, I think I can't remember for sure. I want to say that he caught over 60 passes as a senior running back for Iowa, in addition to rushing for over 1,000 yards. And he played a wing back, slot back for Iowa for a couple of years before moving to that running back position. Boy, when they moved him there, I mean, he is still talked about in Iowa fan circles and placed on a high pedestal that very few Iowa football players have ever come in the same breath as far as ball carriers to Ronnie Harmon. And really, the first player that I have ever compared to Ronnie Harmon since then, and we're talking like 30, 31 years later, is one of Iowa's tailbacks who will be out in Rutgers this weekend, and that's Akram Wadley, and he's also from the area. So he's got footwork that reminds me of Ronnie. He's not as talented as Ronnie, but he's the closest thing I've seen as far as just footwork and juking ability and a fluidity that just leaves you a little bit struck at times.
Yes, and of course, Roddy Watley is a Jersey player. So just another one of the examples of you know, we'll see over the Big Ten as Rutgers plays many of these teams that you know, has 2, 3, 4 players that are from there. So the talent is definitely there in the state. So I definitely I don't know, I listened to your podcast, great show. By the way, I'll definitely make sure to send it out to my listeners. You guys had a tough week, obviously, losing to North Dakota State. The story's out there. Everybody knows that North Dakota State is one of the best. It is. It's the 5-time, running champion of FCS football and better than, whatever percentage of FBS teams out there. But it does beg for the question, why play that game?
Yeah, Iowa inked that game back in the summer of 2011, and that was prior to North Dakota State winning any of their current 5 consecutive championships. They hadn't won a championship at the FC level at that point in time. I think they came up from Division II to FCS somewhere around 2004. So when Iowa scheduled them, they weren't the FCS version of the Alabama Crimson Tide. And Iowa had scheduled, they played Montana through the years. They played Maine. They played Northern Iowa. And some of those games have been, a little tougher than fans would have wanted. So, yeah, Iowa wasn't out looking to play this one. It just so happened that in the 5 years that spanned from them signing the contract to playing the game, North Dakota State became what we see now. That being said, Iowa really has no excuse for losing to a team from the FCS, and it's been a very difficult game to take among Iowa fan circles this week.
Yeah, I mean, of course, North Dakota State has, I think it's six in a row that they've beaten from FCS teams, but those were, you know, Kansas, Colorado State, Kansas State, not a team that's predicted to win, the Big Ten West. But, as I said, obviously you turn that page, it was a good team. And, I'm glad that we kind of started off, I'm talking about, you think of Iowa as that prototypical throughout the years, Big Ten team. I don't know if it's a jersey, mm-hmm. but they look like the Steelers, just line it up. We're going to pound you. And of course they've had good quarterbacks, Chuck Long throughout times and throw the ball, but it's power football. It's Juan in the trenches. And, some good points that you brought up in your podcast was, after three games, you're looking back, there are some struggles in terms of creating its identity. Now, C.J. Beathard is by all means, potentially, really behind J.T. Barrett, potentially the second best quarterback in the whole conference. So, you're going through that identity. Are we going to throw the ball? Are we, going to stick to our roots? And, do you think that Iowa's looking at this game, potentially obviously a game that you should win, as that game to reestablish yourself as that dominant team in the trenches?
I think you're right. I think that's what Iowa is going to come out and try to do. And as you mentioned, I think that they haven't had this caliber of a passer in the Kirk Ferentz era at Iowa. Matter of fact, I think C.J. Beathard is probably the second or third best passing quarterback that I've seen Iowa have in my lifetime of watching Iowa football, which goes back to where I can remember it, to about 1980. I think Beathard is on that level as a thrower, certainly as an understanding of the offense. And I think it's tempting to want to say, hey, let's play with this nice shiny toy that we've never had before. But the talent disparity between C.J. Beathard, the quarterback, and the players that he's throwing to is significant. He's not throwing to all Big Ten receivers. He may be throwing to one of the best pass-catching tight ends in the Big Ten, but still the other team knows they can just take away two guys, and then Iowa doesn't have much proven. I think Iowa's going to look to pound the ball in this game. Last week against North Dakota State, and by all means, this is not an excuse for a loss, because Iowa was dominated on the defensive side in the trenches. But Iowa's two best offensive linemen, two players that, if they stay healthy, will be in the NFL. Their starting center, James Daniels, and their right guard, Sean Welsh, they did not play last week. Daniels has been out for the last 2 weeks. So I think Iowa's offensive line lacking some cohesion. They do have talent. This is a much better run-blocking line than it is a pass-blocking line, because I think really they're a collection of guards and interior linemen, which can cause problems on the exterior from a pass rush standpoint. But I think Iowa's going to keep this simple. I think they're going to try to run the ball 40-plus times in this game.
Right. You obviously mentioned Welsh. I mean, there's Boone Myers, at the guard position. And obviously, you're going to run inside. Now, here's the interesting question, because, Rutgers, again, playing with statistics, they played New Mexico last week, who really is a triple option, even though, or whatever, pistol type mm-hmm. of team. They run the ball. They played Howard, where, they were – it's obviously an FCS and a low FCS team. And Washington really kind of blew Rutgers right out of the door so quickly that they could have thrown a lot more if they wanted to. So Rutgers right now is ranked in the 30s, but this is a team that the secondary is the weakness, and probably the defensive line is the strongest part. So do you, how much does Iowa stick with that plan if it is a lot easier than they expect to throw the ball, or B, there are some struggles and they say, hey, well, let's stop trying to force the issue and attack their weakness?
Yeah, I think Kirk Ferentz, he's pretty stubborn. And I think when you talk about Iowa versus North Dakota State on paper last week before the game, you could say the same thing, that, the week before, North Dakota State absolutely was torched in their own defensive secondary by Eastern Washington, a team that ran – a spread offense and threw it a lot. And, you know, Iowa fans were thinking, well, gosh, C.J. Beathard's going to just destroy their young cornerbacks. Well, they made Iowa play a little bit left-handed. Iowa's passing game is most effective when their running game is doing what it wants, because Iowa's primary passing weapon is play-action passing. And that's why Iowa will run the ball into 7- and 8-man fronts sometimes, even though they might only get 1-2 yards. They're setting something up to get you later on with the play-action, you know, post skinny post route or something along those lines. So I think you make bring up a very interesting point, one worth watching with your talented defensive line. I don't think Iowa's going to come out and say, well, we can't attack them on the defensive line because that's where their strength is. We're just going to go here and throw. No, I think last week, I don't think Kirk Ferentz is going to lose another game this year because he didn't run it enough or didn't test it enough. And Akron Wadley only had four carries last week. You know, Ferentz saying that he wasn't injured, but we know that he was nicked up. He had ice on his knee after the Tuesday press conference last week. So I think you'll see both of them in a combination. And I just think Iowa's going to run at Rutgers, even though that might be the strength of their line. It doesn't mean they're not going to pass at all, but the passing game is going to be set up by the running game.
So we'll see a lot of Watley. Now give me a little bit more about Kittle, the tight end. What kind of player does he most remind you of? Because one of the issues that Rutgers has this year is replacing all three linebackers. So
right.
They're going to be matched up with him, obviously the safeties as well. But, what kind of player do you, I guess, kind of compare him to?
He's the closest thing Iowa has had to Dallas Clark since Dallas Clark left early in 2003 as the Mackey Award winner for the top tight end of the nation in 2002. He may not be as dynamic a pass catcher as Clark, but I'm not sure that he's that far behind. He's a better run blocker than Dallas Clark. He's really developed himself into being a very, very good blocking tight end. Now, he's not like a 270-pound guy. He's around 245, 250 pounds. He's very fleet of foot, caught a nice wheel route last week, had two actually very long catches. He's actually a deep threat for Iowa, and he's faster than he looks. So, he is definitely somebody that Iowa's going to look to get the ball to if he's matched up with a linebacker, there's no doubt. He and Matt Vandenberg are Iowa's two primary passing threats.
Now, of course, I have to, again, I think it's the psychological part of it probably is a little bit easier from the coaching perspective, after you get a humbling loss like this, and I'm sure at some point during the week they say, well, let's, forget, probably very early and not Sunday, forget about last week, let's move on. And you probably have a much easier time getting the team to focus and not overlook Rutgers, this week. So that could be a bad thing for Rutgers in some sense. On the other hand, I still say, well, they did lose that game at the end of the day. So,
right.
Perhaps from the optimistic standpoint, there is some chinks in the armor. So, I guess give us, what are some of the things that Rutgers coaches might find on film that they should attack, whether it's on offensively or defensively?
Yeah, I would look at the film if I was the Rutgers offensive coordinator and running the power spread attack like you guys are going to, and I would say, hey, there's openings in the middle of that Iowa defense, or at least North Dakota State exploited something in the middle of Iowa's defense. Miami of Ohio in Iowa's season opening game found some chinks in the armor in the middle of that defense, even though Iowa's linebacker was ejected for targeting from that game. Very, very early on, this power spread, and I think what it hurts Iowa is when you get your skill position players somewhat lined up outside of the tackle box, it forces Iowa, who likes to stay in their base 4-3 set a lot, somewhat reticent to move into nickel personnel, and that power spread can make teams pay for bringing in nickel backs. With the running game, you get Iowa's linebackers a step or two shaded outside farther than they normally might be. It just leaves that middle susceptible to a quarterback who can keep it and run, or just that that zone read fake inside dive to where it causes that linebacker to take a step or stop to check his key. And that's something that the spread has really has had some success with against Iowa defenses the last 4 or 5 years. Is that inside zone read either give or fake. So that's something that I would definitely try to exploit because, you know, Iowa's run defense, which has really been the backbone of their most successful teams over the last 15 years, is not off to a good start at all. That's the first area that I would attack.
You know, it's such a great topic, really, the discussion of this offenses, defenses versus, you know, these spreads, because I think it just touches back in the whole, for Big Ten fans, the whole transition of really, if you look back in 2006, the Appalachian State-Michigan game where you just saw that, you know, teams spread it out and Michigan has the biggest, best defensive offensive linemen and they're just trying to smash it into a spot when then, you know, Appalachian is running around you and it's really not that complicated. But even us at Rutgers for years used to watch while Shiano, as good as the coach was and the defensive coordinator, sticked in his 4-3 base when they would play teams like a Fresno and your or some of the other teams that spread it out. And it's very interesting. Now, from the perspective of Rutgers, unfortunately, they have the power spread, but they don't really have the power spread quarterback. And this is something I'll touch later on with Bobby because there is a true freshman, and he has played. They burned his red shirt. There's about five quarterbacks on the team, and they played him for some reason. And there was some rumor that he was working on inside runs this week. So it'll be interesting to see if we do say that. But that's neither here or there. Now, in terms of Iowa's players to watch, you know, looking at. There's a lot, obviously, Desmond King and Rutgers has Janarian Grant. Now, I think, last week they did a good job, and this coordinator, Drew Behringer, has done a good job of calling the game with the limitations he has a quarterback, where you don't really have a true running quarterback. Well, how do you think they'll match up? I'm sure they're very aware of Grant at this point, but will they throw a King at him, or will they, you know, kind of play it in their base and deal with him as he comes through the zone?
I think the latter. Iowa played against Iowa State a couple of weeks ago, and Iowa State is not a great football team this year, but they have one of the more physically gifted wide receivers. Maybe, you know, in Alan Lazard, he's an NFL guy. He's 6'5", 220, just a fantastic weapon. And in the week leading up to the game, Desmond King told the media that he was going to shadow Lazard during the week, to which we were all shocked and surprised, because that's not how Kirk Ferentz does it. He basically has his corners play right and corners play left. They don't play field. They don't play boundary. They play right and they play left. And, you know, if the uber-talented wide receiver happens to be on the opposite side where Greg Maben is, that's just the way that it is. Well, once Iowa got to the game against Iowa State, of course, they played right and they played left. They did not shadow King on Lazard. So I do not expect at all for King to shadow anybody in this game, and the chips will fall where they will. So if you're Rutgers and you look on tape and you see Greg Maben, the opposite corner for Iowa, opposite King, and you see how he struggled against Miami of Ohio, then yeah, if you feel good about your passing game, then you're probably going to look to go over and attack him as opposed to Desmond King, who, you know, King had 8 interceptions last year. He was a Thorpe Award winner as the nation's top cornerback, and he came back. He's not going to get anywhere near that this year because teams just simply aren't going to throw at him very much, and they haven't thus far.
Yeah, well, that's the life of a corner. Usually you get picked on, and then if you are up to the battle, your interceptions tally goes down as they, you know, keep away from you. So what, in terms of some other players, I guess, on the defensive side of the ball, I know Julio Johnson's a name that you know, jumps out. Obviously we talked about Desmond King, but any other players that, you know, are primed in a game like this?
Yeah, Josie Jewell, Iowa's middle linebacker, number 43. He's a junior. He is one of their best linebackers they've had there. And over the last 15 years, they've had a lot of good ones. lot of pros. Chad Greenway, who's still playing in the NFL with the Vikings, and his last year at Iowa was in 2005. Pat Anger was amongst the NFL's leading tacklers a few years ago for Indianapolis, and that's who Jewel reminds me of a lot, not just because he wears the same number 43 and not just because they were both white. They just play with a ferocity that is difficult to replicate. And when you see a player play at that level and ability with that much of a chip, you remember it. So he is absolutely the player that I would say you would probably see more than any other, more than Jaleel Johnson inside, more than Desmond King. Number 43 for Iowa is going to be on your TV sets more than anybody. And Rutgers is definitely going to know where he's at. And if they're going to want to attack the middle, they're going to try to get him outside of that tackle box with their power spread. I mean, that's just what they're going to have to do. Otherwise, it's going to be some tough sledding in there.
So I have two more topics that I want to touch on here. Well, one, obviously, we talked earlier about Wally being a Jersey guy. One name that jumps out on the roster, quarterback, Tyler Wiegers, who was once committed to Rutgers. I started the show talking about, people don't remember that Rutgers was pretty close in terms of things would have got together, and they when they first announced they were going into the Big Ten, they had a really good recruiting class that ended up just imploding incredibly, and he was one of the players. So how is he in terms of the depth chart?
Yeah, that's a really interesting question. Because in Iowa's first game, and just before their first game, the Iowa coaching staff basically offered up, without being asked, that a true freshman, Nathan Stanley, had really been impressing them in practice, and that he'd moved up to at least number three on the depth chart and was battling for number two. And again, it wasn't that anybody was asking, hey, can you tell us about the battle for the number three quarterback? They offered it up. And then in Iowa's first game, at the end of the game, it was a blowout. They played the true freshman, Nathan Stanley, over Tyler Wiegers. And that pretty much just basically tells you without saying it outright, they feel that Stanley is going to be their starting quarterback for next year, and if he stays healthy, for three seasons. So Wiegers seems like a good teammate. All the TV cutaways we've seen of him on the sidelines, he's smiling and being a good teammate. But you know as well as anybody in this day and age of college football, these guys don't come to sit at that position. They come to play. He's a redshirt sophomore. If he transferred to a lower level, he'd have 2 years to play. So unless he really, really liked Iowa City, and he might, I would imagine that he's probably going to be somewhere else next year unless Stanley would get severely injured in practice.
Yeah, I mean, the quarterback position, obviously, unlike any other position, is tough. I mean, you're a quarterback. You can't. You know, if you get beaten out at defensive end, maybe you play a linebacker, maybe you move inside,
right.
Or, you know, if you're a corner, you might, or you're a receiver, you might go on defense, but you're a quarterback, you know, except for the specific situations when a guy can become a receiver or move over, tight end or something like that. So definitely. Now, I have to talk about recruiting because, I obviously, Iowa, a lot of Nebraska, that's, people, a lot more on people's mind, where, not the most populated states in terms of the amount of Division I athletes that are coming out of it. But there is obviously quite a few. I mean, the percentage is still mostly Iowa on the roster. But, where do they go and pick out? I mentioned Nebraska, they used to get, guys from Florida, from all over the country. But, what are some of the little hot spots that they go and pick up their, recruit to bolster up the Iowa roster?
Yeah, aside from the home state, as you mentioned, right now Texas has been really good to them in this recruiting class that will sign in February if all these verbal commitments make it there. They've got like five or six verbal commitments from Texas and some really good players, 2 4-star players, one of the better running backs in the country, and Eno Benjamin. And then Chevin Callaway, a cornerback. And I think that if Iowa's going to be doing its job in recruiting, it also has to really recruit Illinois well consistently. And Illinois is a couple of years ago, I don't know, their numbers out of Illinois were very low, like one or none 1 year, and that was a big-time cause for concern. So really, it's Iowa and Illinois And then they've mined Ohio well. Now they're focusing on Texas. They haven't really gone down as much in Florida in recent years. And New Jersey's been a state where they've through the years, going back to Hayden Fry, he had a coach on his staff named Bernie Wyatt who just kind of opened up a pipeline out there to New Jersey, had some great players. Sicklerville has been very good to the University of Iowa. And then Wyatt joined Barry Alvarez when he left the Iowa staff and ultimately eventually came the head coach at Wisconsin. And Wisconsin, with Wyatt's connections, just brought in a ton of Jersey players to their program, and that they were a backbone. So Iowa's always got their eye on New Jersey. New Jersey produces a lot of football players, even though it's not the biggest state out there. I think they produce more per capita than Iowa does.
Now, you know, obviously this game, you know, you throw last week out the window, this Big Ten play starts. You're looking at it on paper, it's Rutgers, Northwestern, Minnesota, Purdue. It's not the most difficult start. I mean, it's not what Rutgers has to go with here, where it's Iowa, Ohio State, and Michigan. Yeah. So you kind of put the last week behind, and you know, you're looking, I guess, to start yourself off. And, you know, despite the loss, I mean, what is the mindset of people obviously still thinking this is a team that's going to, you know, go out there and win the western side of the conference?
Yeah, I think that's the message that the coaches delivered this week is like, yeah, that loss stinks. Iowa has a 24-hour rule, whether it's a big win or whether it's a tough loss. After 24 hours, you move on. Easier said than done sometimes than others. But the coaches can tell the players and do so honestly, guys, that game doesn't count in the Big Ten standings. The rankings only matter at the end of the year. And if we go out and take care of business the way that we know that we can, then we can win the Big Ten West and we can get back to Indianapolis and we can compete for a Big Ten championship again and maybe finish the business that we left unfinished last year. And beyond that, it is what it is. And when I'm using the word we, I'm just pretending to be them. So, yeah, I think that is a truthful sales pitch, one that I think the team will absolutely buy. I don't believe that the team is doubting themselves yet. I think they're probably pretty pissed off right now that maybe they didn't take that team as seriously as each and every person in that program should have. And I think that this week they're looking to get back and not only prove to themselves, but prove to Iowa fans and the rest of the country that last week was a fluke. And, you know, whether or not they're able to do that, we'll see.
Well, John, listen, I appreciate you coming on the show. I'll definitely get some info out there, HawkeyeNation.com, and maybe we'll get you back on the show to talk, you know, a little more general about the Big Ten and as the season goes on.
Yeah, I'd love to do that. Getting ready to record a Big Ten and prediction podcast here after I get off the line with you. And I've been watching Big Ten football since I was a little kid and had a show, a TV show on the Big Ten Network back in 2010. So talking Big Ten football more than just Iowa is something I'm always willing to do, and I really appreciate you having me on. It's been great to talk to you.
All right. Thanks a lot.
All right. Take care.
Great conversation there. Now looking forward to shifting over. We got Bobby Darrow of ScarletNation.com. Before I do that, just kind of glance at the schedule real quick. Actually, just looking at that, I didn't realize that, you know, that's a pretty favorable schedule there that Iowa has, and, you know, in terms of getting themselves back on track. This week, the best game probably in the conference, obviously, is Wisconsin at Michigan State. Wisconsin number 11, at Michigan State number 8. So that's the game of the week in the conference. All right, so now ready to move on and shift on to the Scarlet Knights representative, Bobby Darrow from ScarletNation.com. Bobby, welcome back to the show.
Hey, how you doing, Jeff?
Good. It's been a while. Thanks for coming on.
No problem. No problem.
I had a nice chat there with JonathanHawkeyNation.com. I kind of got a nice little rundown on the Iowa, you know, point of view of this. And, you know, it's you know, want to spend a little, not too much time, obviously, on last week, but more on looking at this game. And, you know, I take the perspective from the point of a new coaching staff. And, you know, one of the issues that I'll guess I'll chat with you a little bit is, you know, if you have any ideas or insight into, you know, the slow starts that Rutgers has had. But one thing I take back from last week that, you know, at the end of the day, it was a win and you got to learn how to win. And there's players that, you know, are new from last year and there were not a lot of wins. So a win is a win and they definitely did close out. There were some interesting situations at the quarterback position. We'll definitely touch that. You know, was there any talk about these slow starts and you know, any ideas that they have or is just things that kind of happened that way?
You know, there was different reasons they said each of the last few weeks. This past week, Coach Az said it was the triple option that they gave them so many different looks that they kind of had to get their feet settled. And talking to some of the players, it was an offense that they've been practicing for since the beginning of camp because it is rather complex and not your traditional triple option that you would see out of an Army or Navy. So that kind of, you know, was the reasoning that they gave for the slow start. And against Washington, they said it was just the speed. They weren't used to it, and the game was so fast, and it kind of hit them in the mouth right out of the gate. So, I mean, there are reasons for it or excuses, whatever you want to call them, but it is a definite concern because it's three straight weeks and they didn't look particularly great against Howard in that first half. So, you know, they really, you know, need to correct that, and Chris Ash will be the first one to tell you that. So it'll be interesting to see how they come out against Iowa and see if they can correct any of those problems because another week like that and those that reasoning will just sound like, you know, hot air.
Yeah, and both in the case of Howard and even last week with Janarian Grant fumbling, you had the interception against Howard. You know, the defense was put into bad situations there. You know, they did allow the touchdowns, the first ones, but, you know, at the end of the day, I think after the first quarter, I thought, you know, the defense played pretty well. And, you know, I always say, you know, sometimes when I'm sitting there and you're looking at the struggle and you know, at the end, Rutgers did score 37 points, but at, you know, and 52 last week, but there were struggles in offense, and you can clearly see that, you know, the defense in college football, the way the points are put up on the board, if, you know, if you hold a team into the 20s and the low 20s, you know, you're doing okay. An offense at this level should be expected, if you're going to win a game, to at least get into the mid-20s. So I don't think the defense played all that bad. You know, let's get right to it in terms of, you know, the quarterback, you know, shuffle, if you want to call it. This past week, you know, it was a very interesting time. You know, we heard going leading into the week that Zach Allen was potentially moving. It was very interesting because last week I was talking about, you know, Giovanni Rusciano. And, do we think he's going to get any play time? And then it became throughout the week that Allen may be moved up into the second spot. And then lo and behold, in the very crucial point of the game, he comes in. You know, first, what was your thought about that, bringing him in at that moment? And did you, from what you had heard or seen in practice, were you expecting Allen to get playing time last week?
Absolutely not. You know, I actually asked Drew Maringer a couple of weeks ago if they were going to move him to wide receiver because he had fallen so far down in the depth chart. Well, so it seemed. Then you saw him out there, and you know, it was his first time back in a while, but he looked like deer in headlights out there. So, you know, he came in, he got his feet wet. I can't see him coming in and commanding the offense. Personally, I just think it's the waiting game until Tyron Odin takes over the offense. You know, throwing him out there against the juggernaut of Iowa and Ohio State and Michigan, that probably wouldn't be fair to most freshmen. So I think the staff is just trying to get by for now until Odin is ready. When that will be, I couldn't tell you, but I think they're just trying to get by with Laviano, you know, and they are 2-1 in those games. You know, everybody thought, you know, nobody really thought they were going to beat Washington, but they won the games they needed to. Might not have been pretty, but 2-1. They got by with, you know, their starting quarterback in there. And, you know, I just think it's the waiting game for Odin.
Yeah, I mean, look, I'm one of those, I don't like beating up on Laureano. I think he's in a tough position. One is, you know, obviously he's not a power spread quarterback. I mean, he was recruited to be another one of the Rutgers, you know, pro style quarterbacks. And then secondly, you know, he's a tough kid, and give him a lot of credit because he, with two different coaching staffs, he won a quarterback battle, and you know, clearly Ash brought in Allen for competition. I mean, he went to in spring camp and said, I still got to bring somebody else in. And at the end of the day, Laureano won. So I give him credit, but I think, you know, he ranks, what is it, 119 or so in you know, quarterback rate. And he unfortunately, just the talent is not there. There were so many passes that you know, left a lot to be desired. I think there was, I thought Drew Behringer actually called a very good game. And, you know, there was one or two plays, I think the little play out to Goodwin in the flat where things were just designed correctly and it just didn't execute. And I think that's just the issue. Now, I'm not sure wherever I read it on the rival side or not, and that, you know, was Odin working on some packages this past week? And then, you know, on the back of what John was saying earlier about Iowa having a weakness up front in terms of the middle, do you, you know, obviously you don't want to throw him in there to throw the ball, but do you think maybe he gets a player to, you know, to run that spread?
You know, good question, because you didn't expect him to play in that Howard game, and I didn't expect him and Rasigno just to, you know, trade off that quickly. Didn't expect Allen to play last week. So what is expected this week is really a head scratcher. But he has been working on some inside run packages, you know, kind of option stuff. So, you know, I could see him getting in there, but anything can happen. I mean, the way he's used the quarterbacks, the way Chris Ash has used the quarterbacks, I wouldn't be surprised at anything. But, you know, when you put him in there, you're going to have to – you can't just say run the ball, because, you know, the defense won't have to play honest. And it's the same way with Laureano not running the ball. The defense doesn't have to respect him as a running threat. You know, they know he's going to hand it off to Robert Martin, whoever's in the backfield. So you really limit that offense. You know, it's almost like putting a square peg into a round hole. It's just not going to fit. But you need a guy who can keep those defenses honest, you know, keep the ends from crashing in. And, you know, Laureano just doesn't do that. So, you know, I'm saying what you were saying earlier, you know, the kid's going out, he's gutted it out, he's done what was asked, but he's just not a dual threat quarterback. So, you know, I could see an occasion where Odin gets in this weekend.
Yeah, no, it's the one of the things that it's so difficult to explain, and is it's a real handicap in the fact if you're running this offense and there is not a dual threat, as you mentioned. Like, there's, you know, players and coaches are just natural, and they're gonna, until you make me believe that you can run, I'm not gonna respect it. And I think that's where the limitation. And again, I happen to say I just thought the play calling was really well set up last week. It's just that, you know, there's limitations that, to your point, that, you know, would go away if the quarterback was a running option. But, you know, as you said, you can't bring in Odin if he's not ready to throw the ball, because, you know, this is big time football, and the next 3 weeks are some serious teams coming in. So, you know, one player, though, of course, that you know, jumped at me was Harris. You know, he had the long touchdown. You know, a lot of talk about his athletic ability. He's the Big Ten stolen base leader this year. He's a baseball guy, but he has. I really liked watching him and Grant out there. You know, what do you see in terms of the wide receiver group? You know, in Patton and some of these other guys developing as the season goes on?
Well, you know, Patton's working back from injury. He was, you know, he had an ankle injury at the start of the year, wasn't 100%, and, you know, when he caught that touchdown last week, re-aggravated it. He looked better this week in practice. He'll be out there playing. He might not be 100%, but you also have, you know, Harris and Grant out there, and, you know, Harris is really an electric guy. They need his speed out there. Not the biggest guy, but can really stretch the field, which they sorely need. But, you know, things are going to change a little bit when they play these Big Ten teams. Denarian Grant was a step ahead everybody else, a step ahead of everybody else against Howard in New Mexico. When you play your Ohio States and Michigans, they got 10 Jenorian Grant speed-wise, you know. So it's going to be tougher for him to get free when they key on him. So they're going to need these other guys to step up. Juwan Harris is going to be key in opening up anything with the passing attack, because otherwise, you know, they don't have any other deep threats. So I think they're really going to have to utilize him quite a bit.
I agree. And I think you bring up a great point, because I look back 2 years ago when Rutgers played at Ohio State, and I think they threw that little pass out in to Grant, and you know, he just was swarmed, and you just, whoa, and you said, yes, you know, not only do they have these guys, they're quicker and faster than him, and they're on defense, and it's, you know, I mean, Ohio State is a different world, but, you know, obviously, you know, we talked about Desmond King, there's going to be athletes on Iowa. So to your point, you know, one of the best games that Rutgers probably played in the last 2 years is when Nova and Patton hooked up in that Maryland game. And, you know, he just hasn't been able to get back to that point. So, you know, it's definitely a player that needs to step up. Now, we talked about, you know, Iowa has a tight end to watch. You know, I was impressed with the grittiness of Greg Jones. You know, I'm biased. He's from my old hometown here. I used to live in Colonia. So it's a great story. But, you know, there's still a lot of greenness in there. In this week, what do you think Iowa is going to attack? I mean, we talked about, you know, that they're probably going to try to reestablish themselves on the run. But, you know, the Rutgers still has some weakness on defense in terms of the secondary.
You know, I don't think they're just going to actually go after one or two guys. I think they're just going to run their offense, and you're going to see some of the weaknesses show up when they do run that. And one of it is the linebackers. You know, I think Greg Jones has played the best out of any of the three. You know, he's not a super athletic guy. You know, he's in the right spot at the right time, plays tough. I think he's been head and shoulders above the other two starters. I think the linebackers are going to struggle again this week. There's just – you know, the cupboard was left kind of bare when Chris Ash took over. So those guys are trying to learn on the fly, and you know, it's going to be a struggle there. You know, the safeties are going to have to play better as well. You know, that second, third level against the run, they're really going to have to step up and play a lot better than they have been playing. But, you know, with the personnel, they're just going to be outclassed as far as talent goes on the Iowa side, and it could make for a long afternoon.
Yeah, I mean, and this is why I kind of started like with my preamble a little bit, and it's tough whenever Rutgers plays a new team and they're coming, you know, a new fan base, and they're playing this, and you know, I think sometimes the perception is that Rutgers is struggling because it's playing in the Big Ten, but it's really a talent issue. I mean, you know, you have New England on TV today, and you know, give Rutgers back Logan Ryan and Daron Harmon and Brandon Bing and Marcus Cooper, and we're going to have a whole different conversation, you know, throwing the ball, you know, but it's not there right now. And I think that's, you know, there's no way around that. You know, the talent is just not there. But with that said, you know, you saw Harris there, you know, last week. Who are some of the other players, young guys, that, you know, you maybe think that are close to contributing or, you know, are ready to kind of, you know, take a different role on the team and put in some good contributions?
Well, I think you have some freshmen that are going to play a lot more as the season goes on. I like what KJ Gray does at safety. Tyreek Williams at linebacker, you know, he's backing up Jones now at the Sam. I think he has a bright future. I think he could work himself in the mix sooner or later. Damon Hayes, I think, will be a starter by the end of the season. You know, Isaiah Wharton's been up and down, and Hayes has been steadily progressing. So he is definitely one to watch. You know, you have some decent freshmen there. DeCoven Bailey, they're young, though. So, you know, it's going to take some time. On the offensive line, Jonah Jackson's coming along real nicely. So I think this year you're going to have to try and build some of those guys. You know, some of them might not be quite ready to take over the starting role, but with a little seasoning next year, they could be a definite upgrade than what they have now. But those young guys that I mentioned are guys that I think you should really watch out for in the next three, four, five, 6 weeks. Obviously, the next three games are going to be tough, but getting that experience should help these guys when the Illinois comes around, when the Maryland's come around, when those games that are really winnable come around. If they have that experience, you know, they could put some wins together there, and I think those are the important games that are going to determine how this season ultimately plays out. So I think you just got to get through these next three games healthy, as healthy as possible, and use it as a learning experience, try and be competitive, and look ahead to those games that they could really have a chance to win.
Now, we mentioned now there's two players that I'm interested in, obviously. Bailey, in terms of where's his future, is it on the offensive side or defensive side, and has he moved back? And then the other player, which, you know, was a nice source of lightning rod on the, you know, boards, is Kamoko Touré. How far is he from getting back on the field and contributing?
Well, DeCoven is going to go back to offense. It's just he has a cast still on his hand. He told me it's probably about two more weeks from getting it off. So he can't do any catching with it, and they figure they could use him on defense. That's just a temporary thing. So he'll be back at wide receiver once that cast is off. Touré, you know, he looked like he got a little bigger, but, you know, he had the two shoulder surgeries and still had a ways to go. A lot of work due in the weight room, you know, getting back into the swing of things. And the staff hasn't seemed, or Chris Ash hasn't seemed overly confident every time he's spoken about him. So I know he had that flash a few years ago and everybody thought he was the next coming. But, you know, I think he's still got a ways to go before he can really make a significant impact. If he gets out on the field, it's his first play in a long time, coming off two shoulder surgeries, I wouldn't expect a guy to go out and have five sacks in a game.
It was legendary stuff, you know, in terms of when he first came on and then, you know, the blocked field goals but you know, it's tough. And, you know, as he moves along, you're now hoping that he's the guy that can just at least put it together to get a shot in terms of getting, a chance to play at the next level, but he has to get on the field at this time. Before we ended, I guess, you know, a couple questions I have, again, I kind of try to keep everything in perspective. I think the coaching staff, you know, obviously they're new and they're learning too. And obviously different, you know, a lot of people complained last year when Flood, stuck with Laviano all year. Then now you may say, well, you know, the whole thing with Allen, say, wait a second, do these guys have a plan? But I kind of think I like it in the way that he's saying he's not happy. He's not saying that, you know, he's not going to say, look, I run my power spread, I'm going to do this, and this is my guy. And, you know, they want better, but unfortunately the players aren't here. What are your impressions so far, now 3-4 weeks into the season of this coaching staff?
Like I said, I don't know if they realized how tough of a road it was going to be. You look at the last few recruiting classes and you already have a good portion of them that are gone, let alone some of the guys who didn't contribute. So, you know, the depth isn't there. You have some positions that are just bare, and the staff is just trying to piece it all together. You know, with the quarterback, I'm sure Ash wants to go out and run that power spread and do it, but he doesn't really have the personnel. And like I said, with Odin, they're bringing him along. And, when he's ready, I think you'll see him out there. But I think they've done a decent job working with what they have. The slow starts are a little suspect. I would, if that continues, then you'd have to kind of raise a skeptical eye, to the coaching. You have to get these guys ready to play. But, they're 2-1. They lost the game to, a highly touted Washington team and won the two that they should have won. So, like I said, at the end of the day, the wins and losses are what matters. And, it might not have been pretty against Howard, might not have been pretty against New Mexico, but they won the game. So however you get it done, I think in the end, as long as it's a win, it's a win. And, you're never as good as your best win. You're never as bad as your worst loss. So week to week, things can change in college football. And who knows, maybe the staff, uses these early games as a stepping stone. But as far as evaluating them, I think the jury is still out. I can't really give them a grade as of yet because it's still a little too early.
Well, Bobby, appreciate you coming on the show. I think it's one of those games that, just hope for a good performance. But look forward to chatting again in the future. And thanks again for coming on.
All right, definitely. Thanks, Jerry. Appreciate it.
Well, that wraps up another edition of the Our Big Show. I appreciate everyone listening. You know, to our Iowa fans that are visiting, hopefully you have a good time. And, you know, I think the sentiment here, unfortunately, I talked about it. You know, it's, you know, there's a talent issue at Rutgers, and this is one of those games that you might take a moral victory if they can just be competitive and keep it close, especially with Ohio State and Michigan coming up.